en vigor. Antes y después de su aprobación, la contestación a la restricción de derechos y libertades de la norma ha estado liderada por la sociedad civil. Por ello, partidos y defensores de derechos humanos hacen un llamamiento.
Trabajar entre lo que son los parlamentarios y las organizaciones de la sociedad civil para poder construir estas leyes que son las que nos merecemos y no estas que son una mera tomadura de pelo y que son de todo menos para fomentar la seguridad de nadie, que no sean las élites de este país.
La solfónica del 15M ha sido la encargada de poner el broche final al acto en las escalinatas del Congreso. Los partidos políticos y las asociaciones contrarios a las leyes Mordaza aseguran que es necesario derogarlas cuanto antes. Sin embargo, reconocen que para ello es necesario una mayoría parlamentaria de izquierdas y que de momento no existe. Eduardo López Jamar, Hispan TV, Madrid.
El retiro de las fuerzas militares rusas de territorio sirio ordenado por Moscú ha sido visto como un gran incentivo para las partes involucradas en las pláticas de paz en Ginebra. En rueda de prensa, el representante de Siria en la ONU, Machar Jafari, señaló que la presencia militar rusa podría regresar a Siria si fuera necesario para el país árabe. Carlota Fluxa tiene más detalles.
La decisión de retirar parte del personal militar ruso de Siria fue acordada con el gobierno sirio, afirmó hoy en Ginebra el líder de la delegación de ese país que participa en las negociaciones para la paz mediadas por la ONU. En declaraciones a la prensa durante la tercera jornada de conversaciones, Bashar Jafari aseveró que la reunión con el enviado especial de Naciones Unidas para Siria y advirtió que ningún grupo de oposición debe monopolizar las discusiones sobre el futuro del país. El diplomático consideró que la Comisión Suprema para las Negociaciones, la agrupación opositora respaldada por el gobierno saudita que negocia en Ginebra, no es lo suficientemente representativa de los detractores sirios. Cuando se le preguntó si la retirada de las tropas rusas de Siria afectaría el resultado de las negociaciones, Jafari respondió que si bien el anuncio del presidente ruso Vladimir Putin fue una sorpresa para el mundo, no lo fue para el gobierno sirio, puesto que fue acordada por las autoridades de Moscú y Damasco. Nuestros amigos y aliados rusos llegaron a Siria por una decisión conjunta y el día que se vayan, se retiren o vuelvan a desplegar sus fuerzas de manera parcial o total, será una y otra vez una acción coordinada entre Siria y Rusia. El líder negociador insistió en que la presencia militar rusa podría regresar a Siria si fuera necesario para el país. Carlota Fluxá, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
En Palestina, el Centro de Asuntos de la Mujer abre la 11ª exposición sobre productos femeninos. Unas 66 asociaciones feministas propietarias de pequeños proyectos participaron en la exhibición de sus productos que incluyeron ropa tradicional, accesorios, hechos a mano y comida. Nur Harasin nos explica.
El Centro de Asuntos de la Mujer en la Franja de Gaza inauguró el martes la 11ª edición de la exposición de productos femeninos en conmemoración del Día Internacional de la Mujer, que se celebra cada 8 de marzo. 66 asociaciones feministas, así como propietarias de pequeños proyectos, participaron en la exhibición celebrada en el centro Al-Saliat, en el oeste de la ciudad de Gaza, que atrajo a cientos de visitantes. A pesar de la escasez de materia prima en la franja debido al bloqueo israelí y al cierre de sus fronteras, los participantes pudieron mostrar sus productos, que incluían ropa tradicional y accesorios hechos a mano y comida. La exposición pretende revivir la herencia palestina y resaltar la creatividad y el papel de las mujeres palestinas en la sociedad gazatí.
Yo diseño modelos nuevos de trajes tradicionales palestinos todos los años. La herencia palestina representa nuestra identidad y nuestra cultura histórica recibida de nuestros antepasados. Esto ayuda a evitar que los israelíes se apropien de nuestra herencia como parte de su cultura.
La mujer palestina ha sido siempre un pilar en la lucha de su pueblo contra la ocupación israelí y ha sido un gran ejemplo para las mujeres tanto en su comunidad local como en el extranjero. Organizaciones de derechos humanos cuentan que 8 mujeres palestinas y 7 niñas han muerto a manos de las fuerzas de ocupación israelíes desde el comienzo de la intifada el pasado octubre en los territorios ocupados. 118 han sido detenidas en el mismo periodo.
Nuhar Zintri, Su TV, Gaza.
En tanto, en la ciudad de Nueva York, las Naciones Unidas emitieron un llamado mundial a poner fin a las disparidades que existen entre hombres y mujeres en materia de salarios. Jordi Trujols tiene los detalles.
Naciones Unidas albergó este miércoles un evento de alto nivel sobre la igualdad de género y los salarios que emitió un llamado mundial a poner fin a las disparidades que existen entre hombres y mujeres en esta materia. En un diálogo celebrado en el marco de la sesión de la Comisión sobre la Condición Jurídica y Social de la Mujer, el primer ministro canadiense Justin Trudeau y la directora ejecutiva de ONU Mujeres, Phumzile Mlambo-Ngcuka, expresaron criterios sobre el tema. El mandatario canadiense se declaró como feminista y destacó que cree en la igualdad del hombre y la mujer, recordando que queda mucho trabajo por hacer para llegar a la igualdad. Asimismo, destacó las reacciones negativas que encontró para nombrar a un gabinete con la misma proporción de hombres y mujeres y que esa paridad aún no ha llegado al Parlamento canadiense, donde las mujeres solo son el 26% de los legisladores. En igualdad de salarios, por ejemplo, todo el mundo pensaría que un país progresista como Canadá lo estaría haciendo bien. No solo no lo estamos haciendo bien en comparación con otros países, sino que no lo estamos haciendo bien en comparación con nuestros vecinos y aliados. Tenemos mucho que hacer en esta materia, señaló Trudeau. Durante el desarrollo del encuentro, Phumzile Mlambo-Ngcuka declaró a Trudeau como una de las voces líderes de la campaña, él para ella, lo que él aceptó como un reto para hacer más. Jordi Trujols, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
En otras noticias, los niveles de contaminación atmosférica registrados en la Ciudad de México orillaron al gobierno a declarar una medida de alerta que hace más de 10 años no se registraba. Los más afectados son los niños, los ancianos y los pacientes de enfermedades pulmonares. Fernando Camacho nos explica.
El viajero alemán Alexander von Humboldt definió alguna vez al Valle de México como la región más transparente del aire. Hoy, el escenario parece ser muy diferente. Los habitantes de la capital mexicana padecen a diario los efectos de la contaminación.
Nos cansamos, no rendimos lo que debíamos rendir. Y bueno, la ciudad es muy complicada porque es enorme.
Siempre tengo los ojos irritados, siempre tengo reseca las mucosas nasales.
Debido a la gran cantidad de sustancias dañinas en el aire, las autoridades de la Ciudad de México declararon la llamada precontingencia ambiental. Aunque muchas veces no se ven de forma inmediata, los efectos de la polución para la salud humana pueden ser letales, dice este especialista.
Puede ir desde cosas muy leves como rinitis, que es inflamación de la nariz, de los senos paranasales, bronquitis, asma bronquial, o afectar por la presencia crónica de los contaminantes, el desarrollo incluso de cáncer pulmonar.
Por primera vez en 11 años, el gobierno de la capital del país emitió la fase 1 de la precontingencia ambiental, que se activa cuando la cantidad de ozono o de partículas milimétricas es riesgosa para los habitantes. Los más vulnerables son los pacientes de enfermedades pulmonares.
Son los más afectados, así como los niños que tienen un sistema inmune que todavía está en desarrollo y que no pueden controlar las diferentes partículas que se encuentran en el aire y que pueden ser dañinas para un ser humano.
De aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa, el mismo que es producido gracias a las generosas donaciones de las y los radioyentes. A nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
My name is Brad Johnson. I'm a former Clear Channel radio engineer, and when I'm in Santa Cruz, I listen to Freak Radio Santa Cruz.
Coming up next on Free Radio, it's the March 17th, 2016 edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, with special phone guest Kathleen Williams from Sacramento. Stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome to another edition of Bathrobe's Pierre's Broadsides, another home edition, and I hate to do it, but this is, Free Radio is looking for a studio, and I'm announcing it because we need it, and we're willing to pay for it, and we hope you folks out there value us enough to want to do it. But sparing the guilt-tripping edition, it's, the inducement is $500, as regular listeners know. You find us a 10x10 space, either indoors or outdoors, with access to electricity, the internet, hopefully a bathroom, though we could probably find some way to work that one out. And you get the five C's, and we get the studio, and I can stop trying to deal with this really distorted music and the problems I have putting the show together with nuts and bolts and scotch tape at home. The number to call if you have any information or you have any thoughts about this show is 831-423-4833. Again, 831-423-4833. Lots happening and not much time to talk about it in terms of a deadline I have to get this show out. There will be at the very end of this program, or actually for the last 45 minutes or so, an interview with Kathleen Williams of the Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee. I'll be talking about that right before it comes on. What's happening in Santa Cruz is, not a hell of a lot, but the Freedom Sleepers, who I think have actually inspired some different groups throughout the state, continue to do Tuesday night sleepouts. Tip of the hat to Toby Nixon, who I think went to the hospital the other day. I haven't actually heard what's happened to him, but I haven't heard that anything terribly serious has continued. Toby's very sensitive food diet, and it actually makes what he is doing even more remarkable, coming over from San Jose to do the Freedom Sleepout every Tuesday night. On Tuesday night, there was a number of people joining him on the sidewalk, and it was, I was not there, but I did get some reports, which I'm hoping we can actually get to you on Sunday when I do a longer show from 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon, sometimes longer. MLB of Freedom Sleepout number 37 coming up at the same time as the next city council meeting, which I hope to give you some update on Sunday when I'm able to actually see the agenda, which comes out usually late on Thursday, although it may already be out. You can find it online if you want to get an advanced peek. Huff, meanwhile, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which meets every Wednesday, had a fairly spirited meeting at the Sub Rosa Cafe with half a dozen to a dozen people who were planning for the Project Pollinate kind of get-together, which happens on the 19th of March. That's on day after tomorrow, Saturday, at the San Lorenzo Park all day. And Huff had kind of hoped that there would be some organizational push by different groups to respond to the really cruel and oblivious city council reaction we got to Don Lane's mild proposal to eliminate the word sleep from the camping ordinance. You can't camp, but you can sleep, you know. Well, good luck with that. But at least it talked about the human rights violation, and it would have made it technically legal to sleep on the sidewalk with blankets and sleeping bag. Lane added that to the original proposal, which didn't mention sleeping bag, and so that would have been still be illegal. But the city council majority, as most listeners to this program know, decided no way. We're all in favor of housing. We want homeless people to be able to sleep, but we'll keep the law that makes it a crime because it's a useful tool for the police. So I'm hoping that folks are going to be interested in coming together to find ways to fight this. Already there was a protest on Tuesday, even prior to the Freedom Sleep Out 36th Freedom Sleep Out. Dogwood, a local activist, led a picketing at the town clock and sign raising, and then walked down the sidewalks of Pacific Avenue to the Freedom Sleep Out. And I covered some of that. Some of the interviews will be available on Sunday. I might even play some of them today. And Huff came up with an idea. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom came up with an idea. Well, we've already been working with trying to reopen bathrooms. There used to be a 24-hour bathroom across from New Leaf. It was closed because, according to the worker, homeless people slept in it because they couldn't find shelter elsewhere, and that became the pretext for closing the bathroom. There are other bathrooms all around town that are pretty sturdy, such as the bathrooms at the City Hall, right across from the City Council chambers, which could be open 24 hours a day. They're centrally located. They're kind of slightly off the beaten track, so if you have homeless folks using them and the merchants are nervous about having raggedy people in the area, of course, late at night, why would they give a shit, so to speak? That would be a place where people could use the facilities. In fact, what usually happens is the bathrooms are closed rigidly and sharply, or at 5 o'clock when the city council offices officially close down, unless there are, I guess, meetings at night, and sometimes I'm not sure if they're kept open for those. I know that for some of the Freedom Sleepouts, they have definitely, well, for all the Freedom Sleepouts, they've definitely closed them at night. And that's been every night, every Tuesday night, for the last 36 weeks. Anyway, Huff's been circulating a petition, special tip of the hat to Zav for his work here, urging that these bathrooms be kept open, and that there will be a sign-up of people who want not only to see this happen, but are willing to walk with homeless folks to the public works to demand it happen after we get the requisite number of signatures. I'm not sure what the magic number is. And demand it be open. I don't know if it's going to be a shit-in. That might be a little smelly. But it's clear public bathrooms are really needed in Santa Cruz, particularly at night. And it's stupid that they aren't there. And also, I think it's a cost. It has a fiscal cost. The cleanup costs, obviously, are going to be more. Even when they talk about, oh, they're going to vandalize the bathroom. And there was some vandalism, I believe. But that wasn't the reason, according to the workers, that it was closed. It was closed because people sheltered in there. And of course, that shows the need for shelter. It's going to be particularly important and particularly pressing in mid-April when the Winter Armory shelter closes down. And it's still important. The Huff table at Project Pollinate, due to set up at 10:30, and I guess Huffsters have already planned to be there all day. I'm going to show up at noon and do a little speechifying, probably, or publishifying. Other Huffsters will do the same. What we really want to do is try to get the groups that showed up at City Hall in support of the Lane proposals last week to figure out and act on something, some kind of protest, some kinds of ongoing pressure that will, or relief from pressure for homeless people, but pressure on the politicians who are oppressing them. It's happening in other cities, and that's one of the things we're going to be bringing up at the Project Pollinate Homeless Table. There's a Salinas, California Chinatown encampment, which regularly had been cleaned up, and actually cleaned up actually applies here rather than meaning destroyed. Usually cleanups against homeless means destruction of their tents, fencing off of the area, seizure of their property, and so forth. In Chinatown, that had not been the case. Instead, they were told to leave for a period of hours while the area was, you know, washed and dealt with. And then people were invited or allowed, I don't know if they were invited, to return. This is right outside the Dorothy's place, the service is there. And I'm hoping to have a long interview with this. I thought I did. I'm having a little trouble finding it, which I did with Wes White, who's an activist who over in Salinas will be one of the activists who's standing against the police. This time it will be a real destructive cleanup, according to the threats of the police department and the announcements of the attorney who's defending the homeless, Anthony Prince. You can find more about this in the Californian, a local Salinas newspaper online, which has been covering the homeless struggle with somewhat greater depth than you usually find in mainstream media. So I'm thinking of caravanning over there on Tuesday. It depends on my health. I'm kind of still pooped and medically not in tip-top shape, but there is going to be a massive rally, hopefully a massive rally. Apparently there are hundreds of people living in the homeless encampment in Chinatown on Tuesday, the 22nd of March, which will be the same time, unfortunately, as the Freedom Sleep 37, so some of us will have to divide our energies, but I think it's important to support this one particularly, and also the Freedom Sleep here, obviously, because the next day, on the 23rd, and actually Freedom Sleepers who want to support the Santa Cruzan but then come on over can come over early in the morning of the 23rd when police are due to swoop in and destroy the Chinatown encampment. So that will be, there'll be some sign-ups at the Huff table at Project Pollinate. Look for us. We should be there throughout the day. And we'll also be talking about what's to be done in Santa Cruz, how to reopen bathrooms. There are a variety of other concerns that Huff has been raising lately. It's not clear whether it's Take Back Santa Cruz or other conservative neighborhood organizations, but the attempt to shut down recycling as part of the general make the Santa Cruz uninhabitable for homeless folks or very difficult for homeless folks or, as they like to put it, less welcoming for homeless folks. And those are some of the things that are happening in the near future. And I'm going to kind of be running through and trying to give you more access to voices from the street, because I haven't played too many of those recently. I've been playing a lot of flashbacks from different times. This show will consist of more recent stuff, because I have been able to get out a bit more. And if you have any comments or questions, call in at 423-4833, bits of information, and we can, maybe I can satisfy your wonderings, although you won't be able to reach me. You might be able to reach me during the show, but you will not be on the air, because, as I said, we need a studio, and we need to find information as to where we can rent a studio. So get in touch with us, 423-4833. I can always take information, and that, I think, is something I can pass on my radio show as long as my voice holds out and as long as the equipment doesn't produce too wretched a product. So let me know if, A, the content is something you're enjoying, and if the presentation is something that, you know, you can actually endure or encourages you to listen to. Let's have a musical break.
Thank you.
And that was Carol Denny from, 20 years ago when she was broadcasting on Berkeley Free Radio. There were a lot more free radio stations in those days, though I actually haven't had an update on that situation or researched it much. If anybody has new information on that, give me a call, 423-4833. Leave me a message. I'll get back to you. We'll find out what's going on. I'm also hoping to do an update on the medical marijuana situation in terms of these counties' latest capers and the Cannabis Coalition, Cannabis Advocates Alliance. I'm not sure exactly what they're called. They're, some would say, in collusion with the county. That's activist Mike Boyd's opinion. Some would say successfully have curbed the county's repressive impulse last summer, which is true. They did. The question is, are they now colluding and creating a new repression? And I haven't yet got enough information or focused enough attention on it to give you a useful opinion on that. But I'm hoping somebody like Pat Malo can. Pat has not gotten back to me in the last half year, but I'm still trying to reach him. His name is appearing in the newspapers as part of the kind of group that's working to find regulations for growers that are amenable to the growers and the distributors. But then last I heard, the authorities were using the marijuana tax created by voters a year and a half ago, and that Mike Boyd is suing to end, fund enforcement and attacks on marijuana growers in different places in the county. And so we're going to hopefully find out more about what's going on there. Also, a lot of information is reaching me. I mean, I'm noticing a lot of stories in newspapers around police killings across the country, probably because there's increased interest in that, as well as supposed rectification measures such as the Police Review Board in New Jersey and other places. Interesting stuff around the attacks on the homeless and the supposed response of increased shelter options up in San Francisco after the destruction of the Division Street homeless encampment. Chronicle has been doing a lot on that. And some interesting stuff by a person who I generally disagree with wholeheartedly, columnist C.V. Nevius, who is usually a big cheerleader for running the homeless out of town and criminalizing them with new laws. But he also is supporting a proposal by a San Francisco supervisor to set up injection centers or a center and a wet shelter. That is, a wet shelter is a place where people who are drunk can go and can live, and apparently saves a lot of money, according to the reports from a Seattle group, and I'm going to be reading from that article hopefully next Sunday. And also, inhalation centers, those are places such as have been worked on in Europe and in Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia, where if you want to shoot up hard drugs, you go there, you do so in a safe condition, you do so in a non-squalid scene, and you do so in a way with safe drugs, I guess. I don't know whether they supply the drugs or whether you bring your own, and hopefully I can learn more about that, but it certainly beats the criminalization that is happening and the rampant disease and crime that's a part of it. Not to mention, you know, the sordid conditions that it creates among poorer communities. So, a lot of stuff hopefully coming up on Sunday, but right now let's turn to the Red Church. That's the Calvary Episcopal Church where I was returning to after an absence of a couple months almost to get some stories. Folks line up there for a meal on Mondays. Yes, once a week they all get to eat there at the Red Church. And there are other places, it's true, where homeless people can eat, but they're no longer available meals at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. That's now Phil Kramer's domain. He apparently has gone from interim director to full-time director. And while Phil has been more forthcoming on some stuff, I found him less than forthcoming when I ran into him at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting. But who knows, maybe he was discouraged by the City Council situation or by my asking him jokingly how things were behind the locked fences and the security guards of his homeless lack of services center. In other words, I approached it in the not the most respectful way, nor does it deserve any respect, at least those aspects of it. Anyway, let's hear what some of the folks at the Red Church had to say who are waiting in line and getting, I didn't sample the meal on that night, but often the meals are quite tasty. So once a week, tasty meal, although, well, you'll hear that Father Joel Miller has either stepped back or moved on, or I think he's still around, but he's not organizing the meal, but the volunteers whom he recruited still are, and that's who we're going to hear from, as well as the folks eating there.
Only sole surviving, oh, actually, one of the few sole surviving members of the Homeless Issues Task Force of 16 years ago. Mel Nunes, hi, Mel.
It's a pleasure to be in your company. And with good people all around, I don't believe we have any city council members here tonight, though. In fact, I've never seen a city council member here.
Ain't it a pity?
Yeah, I don't know how that could happen. But anyway, there's a transition going on at the Red Church, and it depends on good people continuing to show up, you know, and share meals.
Well, I see Phil Posner, Steve Place doing on the Bagel Brigade. I see.
Well, they're not the good people. They're trying to have the goodness rub off from folks who are eating here.
They are the privileged few, of course. House people. But what about the folks running the show? I know Joel Miller has stepped or been forced into the background.
He's been quoted this last week saying, "It's not my monkey and it's not my circus."
Should we understand by that he is perhaps tired of the whole process?
That's speculation. But anyway, it was a response to someone wanting them to come fix something at Red Church. And, you know, there's always things.
Was the bishop telling him to get the fuck out of town?
I didn't hear that. No. But anyway, he looks a lot happier most recently.
I can believe it.
Yeah. And you can't please them all. You might have noticed that in your work.
Or very few, actually. Yeah.
And at what point do you say, who knows how much time is left, I'm going to pursue something that's joyful. And maybe I'll return, you know, because Joel's kept his house in Athens. And
you're here, and I guess Joel, when did Joel officially retire, or did he?
He did
February?
I think on Valentine's Day was his last.
Yes, today, of course, 14th. Is March 14th today.
There you go. And
so we're a couple of Sundays beyond.
It's National Pi Day, in fact.
I've heard that, National Einstein Day or some such thing.
But also, yeah, this relies on us, you know, keeping it going. If it's of value, it can keep going if enough of us show
up. We're talking
about
the Monday meal here.
The Monday meal and community. Mm-hmm. And information sharing, which you're very much a part of, always have been, you know. Invitations, inspirations. It's more honest dialogue than we'll ever probably see at our hallowed council chambers.
Shitty council?
Yeah. Well, 2 minutes of time is, you know.
We don't call her 2 minute Matthews for nothing.
Yeah. However, the council people weren't limited to 2 minutes, I know. They're washed, and we're not.
They are the great wash, yes.
So we're on the same page. I'd like to fight with you about something, but we agree on so much.
Very boring radio. We can work on it. Are people being given these little tickets that require them to present tickets where they get their meal, or has that changed?
I've not seen tickets, you know,
Are they being driven away from the perimeter of the church outside on the grass?
There's some nonviolent anarchy going on. Can you handle it?
So Joel's golden rules are being, should we say, tarnished?
He implemented that And I never had a long discussion with him about it, but I feel it was a response to some reactionary folks that would really like to close this down. There's lots of them, you know. So this was a halfway kind of measure of discipline that he thought would promote community. And truly, this isn't a drive-through window when it works. People do feel it's worthwhile sitting down, even with someone who's not just like them, and being patient, being civil, and listening, which I'm not doing right now. I'd like to listen more. You know? Might learn something.
Well, I'm listening to you. I guess it seems to me primarily, well, it's nice to have community with the cutoff of emergency meals at the Homeless Lack of Services shelter last summer. This has become a more important resource, not to mention the flight of Stephen Fields DeGambry, whatever the hell his name was.
Gambrell.
Thank you.
Stephen Fields Gambrell.
From the Circles Church, driven out of there, and his liberal policies. It sounds like, though, this has become a more liberal scene with the departure, or should we say, the stepping back of Pastor Joel Miller.
I don't know that. It remains to be seen. It goes from week to week, and volunteers keep showing up at the last minute and all, but volunteers are always needed, and simply to sit down and break some bread is a contribution to community, and we all have our baggage. Community is messy, but there's more civilized behavior here than in many of those council meetings, council people discussing their own shortcomings.
You got something against our city council, don't you? That sort of a grudge here, I sense.
I'm disappointed.
Really? You expected something different?
I really thought, yeah, that banning of sleep might lose 4-3 rather than 5-2. You know?
Numbers.
Oh, well. But anyway, we can't depend on these agencies, that's all. And why didn't I realize that years ago? But anyway, that's where it is. There it is. Your fans are calling. We're on the air right now. Right?
Indeed, that's a good point. That's Steve. Of course.
Steve is
up to his old tricks.
There you go.
So we'll begin with what we began with, which is that you were part of the 12-member Homeless Icky Task Force, as I used to call them.
Yeah.
Or the Homeless Issues Task Force.
You showed up more than I did.
Well, it was designed, in my mind, to divert energy into a series of recommendations that the most liberal city council ever ignored.
Would you post that link also, again, because those archives are so put on a shelf so far back in somebody's cave that...
You need a report of the Homeless Issues Task Force?
Exactly.
It's actually on the website of Huff, Homeless United for Friends.
That's what I need to hear, and it was the first time I had revisited them for years, and... get ready, but surprise is we haven't moved forward since those proposals were put aside.
And what Mel Nunez and I are discussing is the report of the Homeless Issues Task Force in 2000 that came up with a variety of proposals, several emergency proposals. We didn't even wait till I wasn't on the task force, he was. It was an unusual task force in that it was made up of merchants, downtown association representative, social service provider, legal activists, all kinds of folks, giving the illusion of a kind of a balanced group to come up with some solutions to a number of the problems, or at least suggestions, that were associated with both the criminalization of the homeless and the presence of the homeless. They came up with a lot of stuff. One of them was to end the entire camping ordinance, given the shelter crisis, which had been declared in Santa Cruz a decade before in 1990, reaffirmed in 1995, and again in 1998. I think it may have been reaffirmed since, but we kind of gave up on paper claims that the city council kind of put forward indicated was sort of least concerned about the issue. So the Homeless Issues Task Force full report is available on the Huff website. Huff is The Huff website is at huffsantacruz.org. That's one word, Huff Santa Cruz, small letters, .org, in case you're interested in checking it out. A lot of other stuff, too. I regularly post stuff, or the activists who are working with me do. And let's continue hearing some more from, I think we're at the end of the conversation with Mel Nunez, who's regularly spreads cream cheese on bagels at the Monday Calvary Episcopal Church meal. Let's hear more.
It's neglected. Yeah, it's amazing. So, anyway, I was just there to learn, and I learned.
And you continue to learn, and you continue to kick a little butt, or should we say at least serve a little food here.
Show up, yeah.
We've been talking.
We're beneficiaries of the generosity of the bagelry. Okay, I think they deserve thanks. For years, they've given some surplus bagels of great quality and brought together community. So that's
bagels of
great
quality
right
to produce
there.
A community of equality.
That's a question mark. That's good.
Indeed. And we've been talking with you?
Yeah, Mel Nunez.
Thank you, Mel.
All right, my pleasure.
Once again, the city council voted down. Yeah, we know that. Don Lane's proposed amendment. To legalize sleep here in Santa Cruz.
It's not worth talking about.
So 5-2, our city council voted against that.
Good.
The difference is that right now the Obama administration's Department of Justice has weighed in, and they said that if a city does not provide enough shelter beds, and at the same time they criminalize sleep, that is a violation of the Eighth Amendment.
Yay.
The Eighth Amendment says that we shall not have any cruel and unusual punishment in the U.S. We are experiencing cruel and unusual punishment here in Santa Cruz with the lack of shelter beds and the criminalization of sleep. So we're asking people to come out tomorrow and protest nonviolently and peacefully. Especially I want homeless people and people who sleep outside. So please come and speak out, 3 o'clock at the clock tower, and then we're going to walk through Santa Cruz protesting. Bring a sign if you can. We'll join the Freedom Sleepers, who are on their 36th camp out to protest this sleeping ban. Please come.
All right.
Thank you.
Yo, Deborah.
Thanks for listening. And thank you, Freedom Sleepers.
And I have an announcement as well. Announcement, folks. Announcement.
And before we hear my announcement, the protest, you'll probably hear a bit of during the show. It was scantily attended. A few homeless folks showed up, a number of housed activists, but less than 20, I would say. But they hung for 2 hours. And some stayed for the Freedom Sleep Out. Some of us came and went. I was one of them. And I was, you'll hear at the end of this show, a longer interview, as I mentioned before, from a Sacramento activist, where there has been a every night and every day protest outside City Hall since, I think it was December 1st, sometime in December. Massively raided by the police on January 1st, but homeless activists keep coming back, and mostly homeless folks are running it. I think homeless folks are running it. Mostly homeless folks are the participants, although housed folks provide a lot of support, like food and publicity and other stuff, although I've yet to learn more of the details about this protest. Some of them, I encourage you to hang tough and listen to the rest of the show, and you'll hear Kathleen Williams talking about them. But the issue for Santa Cruz is how do we get the focus of the community, which would involve media, certainly the unhoused community, and certainly parts of the broader housed community, to start putting real palpable pressure on politicians to change things or alternately create alternate solutions independent of the politicians. And the solutions tried by Sacramento involve food. How for a year before the December 1st began its nightly, activists began their nightly protest at City Hall, there was a meal served there. I don't know if it was every night or every week, but it involved a gathering of people and the creation of community. It's kind of ironic. I mean, that's what we would, some folks at the Freedom Sleepers had hoped to do, to create community, but we certainly largely failed to do that in any great numbers so far, although the persistence of some people, housed and homeless, is impressive still. The question is, if we're only doing it every week, they do it every night. And they get arrested and they keep coming back. And even arrested for some misdemeanors. It doesn't, you know, they don't just, you know, suddenly disappear into the bowels of their attorney's offices, or they haven't been scared away like we were here in Santa Cruz. They have been for the last 5 years. And what we have in Santa Cruz is our outbursts of energy and activity that then they're heavily repressed by the police, and since the repression, in response to the repression, people pull in their horns. I know I did. After I was arrested, I wasn't really arrested, I was charged, never arrested for, at least not for that, for reporting from inside the 75 River Street occupied building during the Santa Cruz Occupy movement of 2011. We have to stand up to this. We have to stop being afraid or face our fears and master them. It doesn't mean everyone has to rush out and get arrested, but at some point, and it's, I guess it continues to be my belief, people have to be willing to risk arrest in order to raise the issue to such a volume and to such an extent that the community sees and the politicians have to pay attention. Let's hear some more from the Red Church.
In Salinas, there is a tent city at Chinatown that is now fighting the authorities who want to disperse it. Attorneys have stepped forward to defend this group of 300 homeless people who are there and have been there all year, and in Chinatown in Salinas. I've never been there, but I've read about it. I've talked to people who've been there. And next Tuesday, according to this attorney, they're going to fight back, including a council member from Salinas. And so I'm going to see if some of us can arrange a caravan to go over to Salinas and support the homeless folks and the housed folks over there who believe in this as well, the right of people to be able to sleep in a tent, if nowhere else. And that's going to be, again, a week from tomorrow, Tuesday. If you're interested in this, come on Saturday to the San Lorenzo Park Project Pollinate. It's happening all day. There's a series of free events and concerts. San Lorenzo Park, Saturday. And I'll have a table there. I'll be there. I'll also be around at Dogwood's event tomorrow at the town clock at 3 o'clock, and then to some extent at the Freedom Sleepers at 5, which will go through the night. Also, there's a Huff meeting tomorrow at 11, I mean Wednesday at 11, if you're interested. We have that every Wednesday, free coffee, Sub Rosa Cafe. Yes. Is that right? Then there will be free food at Project Pollinate Saturday. Starts at 10:30, runs until 4. Huff is going to be there, the organization I work with, Homeless United, at around noon. So that's the latest. Thank you.
If anybody needs a flyer, you want to come talk to me, I have a few left. About tomorrow, 3 o'clock at the clock tower.
I'll take a flyer.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Sorry for the extra email.
That's all right.
I'm getting flustered.
That's all right.
Steve Page.
That's me.
Would you like to give an update on this, that, and the other, or anything?
Oops.
All right, so I thought I turned off this machine, but no, it's still on. And here in Bagelland, is Steve Plage. Steve, looks like you're in the midst of bageling it up.
I am, yeah. So, but tomorrow, as you heard Lise announce, there's going to be a gathering at the town clock at 3 o'clock. A little speak out, and then she's talking about perhaps marching over to the City Hall at about 5, and of course Freedom Sleepers tomorrow night.
And of course Steve is referring to what happened a day before yesterday, Tuesday the 15th of March.
Wednesday night is the board meeting at ACLU. We'll be talking about Sidewalk, and what's the latest report from the street?
Joseph Earl Taylor III.
Yes, sir.
And the cops yesterday decided my medicine wasn't mine any longer.
Well, yeah, obviously. And before we hear more of Joseph, my apologies. Steve got cut off, and indeed he gave a somewhat longer report. In fact, I may try to reach him by phone during this recording session and get his latest update on what's been happening. But let's hear some more from Joseph.
They gave me a ticket for possession of pot without a 215 card. Way under the limit. Way under. Only 6 ounces.
And where did you get the ticket?
Not really.
No?
Well, I was right over at that parking lot.
You're pointing a kitty corner across from Jack's. Actually, across the street. And how many officers were involved?
Just one.
Who was the cop?
Let me see if I can find a ticket.
What did he say to you about the whole issue?
He was trying to sell the pot and this and that. I was like, no, this was all for personal use.
And did he catch you smoking a joint?
No, nothing. I wasn't smoking nothing. Yeah, pretty much.
You're calling our police officers thieves, are you, Joseph?
Yeah.
There you are.
And then the night before, they gave me a camping ticket.
And where were you camping? You have a tent? You had the stove set up? There was a large campfire?
Nope. Just in my sleeping bag. And then they went and shut off my Direct Express card.
So when you got this camping ticket, where were you when you got it?
I was over on the one Cooper's Way, over in that corner. At the salon. Huh?
What time of the day or night was it, Joseph?
2 a.m.
And how many police are involved?
Two.
And did they have any conversation with you about this?
No.
And have you gotten such citations before?
100.
And have you ever gotten a warrant for any of them?
Had the warrants in my backpack, and that got stolen.
So you got citations, but did you ever get taken to jail for any of them?
No.
Say that again.
Yeah, Tim, come here, fucker.
Yeah, it's just got ticketed, but never went to jail.
Right on. Have you heard about this protest coming up tomorrow? You know about the Freedom Sleepers, of course.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
You're still a Freedom Sleeper.
Yeah.
So you intend to be there tomorrow night?
Hell yeah.
And what about the march from the town clock at 3?
Yeah. Of course.
Well, that's all I got. Anything you want to add?
Cops, leave my stuff alone!
Thank you, Joseph. Any reports you want to say something?
Leave my stuff alone.
No, I'm about to be camping out here in public tonight.
You've got two nice-looking pooches there.
Yeah, all of them have their shots.
And what are the names of these dogs?
Clarence and Dee Dee.
And these are... What breed are they?
Brindle Terriers. They're both rescues.
Yeah.
Saved them instead of them going to the SPCA in 7 days, and on the 8th they get euthanized. Yeah. I bypassed all that. And hell, the mail, I spent $2,200 before I quit my job after burying my father. And, January 16th.
Not this year.
Alexander David Kali'i Kekaiapua Wharton was laid to rest on June 16th.
That was this year or last year?
Or January 16th. That was this year.
And what kind of work were you doing?
I was working for a homeowner and doing in-home support.
And
he died, I got kicked out, moved to Phoenix, came back here, and I'm on the streets right now.
And how long you been out outside?
Since April 2nd.
Of last year?
March 2nd. That's right, my daughter's birthday is on the 1st.
I got you. So about 2 weeks?
About 2 weeks already. And I've even braved the two squalls that blew through here out at Sunset Beach while I was still having money to afford a campground. No, I don't.
How did your dogs fare at that time?
They actually were probably a little bit more mellow than I was.
They seemed pretty calm.
They also just got finished eating, too.
How's Santa Cruz treating you?
They love me since I'm back. They pretty much told me I shouldn't have left. Phoenix was all bad, so.
And how are the police treating you?
I haven't really had any run-ins with them. I'm not driving right now. That'd probably change as soon as I do start driving.
Or perhaps sleeping at night and...
Yeah, in an unsanctioned area without paying an exorbitant fee.
I'm talking to an old-timer who prefers not to go on audio, but she remembers, and so does the second individual here, who's another old-timer, the Homies for the Homeless protest of 2007, when we had found out that the Jones precedent had been set in Los Angeles before it was sort of set aside by a settlement, which said that if you are outside with no shelter and there's no shelter available, they can't give you any citations for sleeping. And we were trying to get the city to acknowledge this, and we camped on City Hall. You camped on City Hall for a week.
2 weeks. I was down there for two.
You were 2 weeks there. And I know, Crow set up a portable bathroom and
the
bus.
And that's how we were all cooking.
Ryan Coonerty was the mayor at that time, the bookstore Santa Cruz owner or manager or whatever.
Whatever he was. Whatever he was.
And there was a lot of feeling. And I know that... I'll kind of ask you off audio because I know you're not, too hot about that. What do you think of the current Freedom Sleepers situation? Do you think they're coming? They aren't doing what you guys did because you did it every night, but they're doing it once a week, and they've done it for 36 weeks now.
Once a week isn't enough.
That's what I think, too.
Isn't enough. Lock their doors. Sleep in front of it for a month. They have to listen. They have to listen. They're violating constitutional rights. They have to listen sooner or later.
You forgive me for recording this?
No, I'm not.
It's not. You want me to erase it? Because
it's bullshit. They're violating our constitutional rights. Okay,
I never had a run-in with the law until I ended up in Prop 36, and I ended up pissing off Marigonda and making allies indirectly with William Siegel, who's a judge down here.
Yeah.
And he also offered to pay my way through the bar now.
And I believe that's Steve Siegel, who is a local judge.
If that doesn't say anything for you, that should to most people.
Yeah, but...
And he's a constitutional law judge.
But yeah, they're violating all of our constitutional rights.
That's right. And that
question
is how
the Jones Law has been passed. It's been in front of the Supreme Court, people. What part aren't they getting? What part aren't they getting? They're violating Supreme Court laws.
Thank you, Sharon. Anything you want to add?
No.
What do you have to say about this, Mr. Colorful Jacket?
And actually, what Sharon was talking about was the Jones precedent, or originally the Jones precedent, then the Jones settlement in Los Angeles that essentially said, you don't have to show that there aren't enough shelter beds on any particular night. That's too big a burden to put on a homeless person. If you can show that generally there's far fewer shelter beds than homeless folks, that's enough to make the case that any ticketing of people is a form of cruel and unusual punishment if you're ticketing them for a law that criminalizes sleep. And that has resulted in a settlement in Los Angeles, which I've talked about many times, which means people agree to sleep certain distance away from business entrances between the hours, I think it's 9 and 6 in the morning, 9 at night and 6 in the morning. They won't ticket under that law. They will not, either they'll choose not to, or they'll choose not to. And, of course, police have been using all kinds of other laws, as we heard Peggy Lee Kennedy talk about in a previous show, the Venice activist who is now working with Carol Sobel, the lawyer, who was the person who put together the whole Jones argument. And the Jones argument became the basis for the Homies for the Homeless movement in Santa Cruz. The Huff began tabling in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, or the bookshop Coonerty, as I like to call it, the bookshop owned by the Coonerty family, who have moved into politics. The father and the son, Neil and Ryan, become first city council members and then supervisors. And in the course of their political ambition, they have walked over the bodies of homeless people, essentially through relying on, I would say preying on, but it's exploiting the fears of downtown folks, downtown community, who essentially the argument goes, you don't want to see visible poverty because it scares the tourists and frightens employees down there, and also old-time residents. And if that means making it even difficult, even establishing life-threatening conditions for homeless people, that's just tough shit. That's just fine. That's a cost we must pay. Or as Marilyn Albright put it when she was asked about the deaths of 500,000 Iraqi children in the mid-90s after the sanctions imposed by Bush and Clinton, Bill Clinton, after the first war, it's a necessary cost. It's a price we agree to. It's quite a historic quote, and I don't have it quite right, but that was the nasty and evil gist of what she was saying, which I never heard any disagreement from Hillary Clinton, by the way, when she was running around the White House, or from Bernie Sanders, for that matter. Although I haven't researched Bernie's record on the first Iraqi war and the subsequent Iraqi sanctions, he might have opposed them. But he seems to be jumping on the let's arm Saudi Arabia, fund them, and send them in with all guns firing. So he's pretty horrible on Middle East stuff, too. Let's get back to interviews right outside the Red Church on Monday, 3 days ago. That was the 14th.
This once a week is not going to cut it, than being down there. Okay, being at the clock tower, walking up Pacific Garden Mall, it's not going to help. We did that before, and we got told.
We got given the middle finger and the politician will shuffle up. We'll take one step forward and two steps to either side of the subject.
I got good news for you. The Arctic had a heat ray, 14% degrees hotter than normal.
But it's usually going to be wetter than normal on the weekends, and that's what people outside have to worry about.
I was just in the hospital from being wet. I've got bronchitis right now from being out here in this. And they told me, you got two dogs, you ain't going to the armory, Sharon. And Paul even looked at me and goes, don't know what to tell you, sweetie. I'm like,
Our dogs are pretty much our kids, man. They let us know when strangers are near trying to steal our shit.
The one's a medical companion, and I still can't get in at the armory. And I have paperwork to prove that he's a medical companion, and I got told, sit and spin, Sharon. I said, okay, but these ones with wheelchairs, these ones that need CNI dogs.
Purple dogs, fucking...
So you haven't declared your dogs service dogs?
Mine are service dogs. I have medical dockets to prove it.
They refuse to acknowledge them?
Yes.
Well, what kind of documents are they requiring?
Tags, doctor for my doctor's signatures, all of it. Because I still have my grand mal seizures and brain tumors. And that's how I got mine. I got mine directly from HPHP, and it states I can have up to 13 different medical companions. But at the Armory, they're like, nope, nope.
Have you gone back to Matt Nathanson and asked him at the HPHP if he can intervene because of the wonderful accommodations at the Armory?
They're not wonderful, believe me. I used to sleep up there and help do security up there. They're not wonderful.
If I didn't have two dogs, I'd still be doing the hammock and the camouflage tarp routine.
Because up there at the Armory, everybody was getting stolen from. A bunch of the girls were getting raped up there the last time I was up there, all of it.
How long ago was that?
That was in 2009 when I left here and went to Nevada.
And how long have you been gone, and when did you return?
I returned August 1st of this year, of this last year, after being assaulted by my ex and beat up and came back. I'm like, I'm out of here.
And what's your impression since August?
Since August, it sucks. We need the shelter back. They should have granted them the $30,000 or whatever they were needing to keep it open. Now, all that's there is, now you got to get in line and hope that you can get a shower. They don't feed anymore down there. And half the time, your mail just piles up and you can't even get your mail. I got letters that were from 4 years ago still sitting in the mail down there. Paul came out and handed me a stack of letters that had been sitting there for 4 years, and I put in a forwarding address when I left here.
So it was not being forwarded.
No, it was not. And medical. Yeah, I do. And medical, now you got to wait outside of the gate, and hopefully they'll see you. Hopefully they will see you. Half the time they'll see you, half the time they won't. It depends on how full the list is.
What about the River Street Shelter waiting list? That's supposed to be the one good one. Tell me about that, because not to get into the shelter, but to get immunized from sleeping tickets. Do you know about that?
Yeah, I do, and it's a joke. River Street Shelter, they're not even, if you have your medical card for pot, you're not getting in. You're not getting in if you have your 215 card even. They are denying people that. They are denying people from the loft. Even if you are on meds, sick, and you're only allowed 30 days. 30 days, and then you get kicked out for 3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
At Page Smith, all they deal with is drugs, the drug treatment ones, and parole, and the violent crimes. Guys, that's it now. That's it. I already know all about it because Teresa, Jessica, and Maria that used to work in the kitchen, they're some of my best friends. They're like family to me. They fill me in. They fill in. And they let me know exactly what's going on with the law.
What about this, you know, after 3 years after the Homies for the Homeless protest, there was another one, Peace Camp 2010 at the courthouse, where we did, you know.
Yeah, I was there for that one, too.
And as a consequence of that, the city attorney passed this law, because really it was his doing, that said if you're on the waiting list for the Pauley Loft or the River Street Shelter, your camping tickets will be automatically dismissed short of court. Have you gotten any news on that approach?
They do not dismiss those. They make you go through clean slate to get them dismissed, and then you got to go out and do 40 hours of community service in this county.
Now, you know this because
I got one of those tickets.
When you were on the waiting list?
Yes. I was on the waiting list for River Street Shelter.
When was this?
This was in 2010.
Wow. Of course, have you tried recently? Because I'm interested in knowing whether they're still doing that.
Nope. I have not tried recently. I want nothing to do with that lot. I see more drugs on that lot now than before when it was actually open. I've seen a bunch of people down.
And regarding the issue of the River Street Shelter waiting list, which is the only waiting list which is now available. But theoretically, and I've kept saying this on this program, and I hope I'm not proved wrong, Sharon here seems to think that at least her experience is she was on the waiting list and she was still dragged into the Clean Slate program and had to do 40 hours of community service or some such thing, or at least those were the demands put upon her, and the ticket was not automatically dismissed, as was required by Municipal Code 6.36055. That's the camping ordinance section that says if you're on a waiting list, one, the camping lot does not apply to you, and two, all such tickets issued will be dismissed, which is a little contradictory. Why would they even issue a ticket if the law doesn't apply to you? And the answer is they still want to give the police the tools to issue tickets. At least they did in 2010 when this law was passed. And, of course, they showed again at city council meeting that they want to continue this practice. But I haven't heard from other people that no one has said to me, I was on the waiting list and I got a ticket, other than Sharon, so far that I remember. But I got to say that a lot of these conversations I do, and then I kind of file and forget, or don't even file, but just play and forget. So if anybody out there has gotten on the waiting list, which you can do by calling 459-6644. Again, 459-6644, supposedly a 24-hour number, and saying you want to get on the River Street Shelter waiting list, this is my name. I would like you to call me back and confirm that I'm on the waiting list, and then call back every 3 days to keep on the waiting list. If anyone has done that or wants to do it and then finds that they got ticketed by police, again, it has to be under the camping law. It can't be under some other law, which the police are now using freely, perhaps because they know that the camping tickets are going to be dismissed. Please give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and let me know. Or go to the Who Now Bombs table on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, where some HUFF activists are likely to be working on this issue, providing literature. There's going to be HUFF literature. There is HUFF literature on the Food Not Bombs table. And let me know, or give me a call at 423-HUFF. Again, the number to call for the River Street Shelter waiting list, 459-6644. In fact, you know, I think I may give a call before the end of this show to see what happens and see if I can get on the waiting list. That's an interesting possibility. I am limited in time, though. We aren't going to really be able to finish this. But let's continue with conversations with Sharon and Eric, who are longtime Santa Cruz homeless folks who live in their vehicles and have some pretty strong opinions about things.
I've seen a bunch of people down there that have OD'd on the lot, and nothing happens.
Oh, let me check out with this guy. We've been talking with
Sharon.
Thanks, Sharon. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Rob.
So,
I'm having surgery tomorrow.
Well, I'm going to wish you well. In your, what kind of surgery?
I've never had
problems.
Well,
I'm not coming to the hospital. I was going to ask you to visit me. Well, I can send a representative.
No, it's in and out.
So you're not going to be in the Elite March? Dogwood March?
No, that's why I told you.
What about the Project Pollinate thing on Saturday?
Hopefully I'll do that. Maybe I'll get myself up. On Saturday.
Have you gotten any bites from your
Dreamcatcher, of course.
Dreamcatcher, I know we picked up a sheaf of tickets from you a week ago at City Council. I think there were four or five.
Yep.
They're still sitting in my pocket or my box or some such thing. And you say that you also got another one in the rain?
Yes. I was a little late waking up. It was a weekend. They were just clearing house, as you might say, because they don't want anybody sleeping too long.
They being?
The officers of this town, the police.
And where was this private business that you were menacing?
Well, actually, I was helping a woman that got robbed there recently, and I was just standing by, and McMillan Realty down there by defib this.
So you were assaulting a realty company, is that what was going on here? Ruining the business?
No, breaking the chrysanthemums, of course. No, I protected them, and I didn't find any needles or anything, but there was previous activity there of non-kid-friendly, and now it's all fixed.
Well, there you are.
She got her bag back, too. They went to the booth there, and the ladies there in the booth helped my friend retrieve her lost article.
The booth being?
Those ladies that look at the, that read out the...
Yeah.
Well, we're experiencing a very authentic
What is that?
A cute little car.
No, that's not little. That's a...
Well, everybody's got their little thing.
That's a funny-looking Corvette, isn't it?
I don't know what the hell it is.
I think it's
looks like a dinky toy that's
right.
Bigger than usual.
A dinky toy. Matchbox. Dinky toy.
Well, Matchbox is a small one. The dinky toys are the big
toys, man. That was cool. But anyway, back to... So anyway.
What about in the rain? Have you heard about many people being forced out into the rain?
Yes, we are by first alarm.
Yes.
And all the positions they patrol, we are pushed into the rain at 2:30 in the morning.
And give me some instance of this that you actually know about.
Every night, anybody sleeps at the City Hall or at the Civic Center or at the library. Not the library. No, not in the middle of the night, the library.
The library, it's illegal to be on their grounds after, like, 9:30, but you say that's not enforced?
It's not, no. If you are proper about it, actually, if you're proper about it in this town with a properness about everything, you can sleep all night no matter where you are. I know this. Now, I want to say something to everybody. Tickets do not mean that you're... not being improper.
What do tickets mean?
Tickets mean that there's a service agent doing their job. It's nothing to be taken personally. If you act proper, then give them a Coral Street address, everybody. Coral Street address. And that's that. That is that.
What
Thank
about
you.
This waiting list exception? Did you ever use that
Coral
one?
Street, the Coral Street address gives you that card that gives you the waiting list thing, everything. It fills all the criteria for...
The well, actually, to get the waiting list, you have to...
Give a Coral Street address.
You have to call the River Street shelter at 459-6644, give them your name, and then call back every 3 days.
And I just contacted the River Street shelter and spoke to a woman named Sarah, who checked with her coworker and found that, indeed, that at least is what they state as their policy still on March 17th, that if you call them up, get on the waiting list, call every 3 days, you will find tickets dismissed or expunged, as she puts it. She seemed, first of all, I called her in the afternoon and actually got a real person. Sometimes you'll get a machine, but there seems to be, I think there's a recording device on the machine, or there was, and I will be trying that probably later today or at some other point, maybe late at night, to see if folks can call in at whatever time and make sure they're either on the waiting list and staying on the waiting list or putting their names on the waiting list. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. We're going to finish this interview and then move on to a much longer interview from Sacramento with Kathleen Williams about the nightly protest that's going on there to pressure the city council to end the criminalization of homeless people in Sacramento. And then up next is going to be From the Cream to the Dregs, a show with Uncle Dennis. And that will be that.
Correct.
In order to be placed. But have you ever done that?
I'm doing it now.
Really?
Yes, that's why you give every ticket the Coral Street address.
Well, we've been talking with that man about Coral Street.
Address, right. That receives 72 tickets. I've received 72 tickets.
And we've been talking with?
Nobody named Dreamcatcher.
Nobody named. Thank you, nobody.
Thank you.
Fine with Kathleen Williams in Sacramento. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello, Robert.
Hi. And I have been following a bit protests by SHOC. Sacramento, is it Homelessness Organizing Committee?
Yes, SHOC is Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee. We've been well established in Sacramento.
Fine with Kathleen Williams in Sacramento. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello, Robert.
Hi. And I have been following a bit protests by SHOC. Sacramento, is it Homelessness Organizing Committee?
Yes, SHOC is Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee. We've been well-established in Sacramento publishing our street newspaper that's sold by homeless distributors. And
it's called Homeward.
Of the occupation in Sacramento, which was established December 8th of last year.
And the occupation was in front of City Hall? Or?
Yes, it was in front of the City Hall in a narrow strip, the median strip, that became quite muddy and actually exists in a kind of a weird canyon, one of the windiest spots in the area. And these brave occupiers have occupied it every night. They've moved over to the Capitol for a period. Now they're back. But they've been occupying it every night since December 8th.
So they're still there. They were there last night?
Yes. Yes, they were. I'm out of town right now, so I can't verify that. But it's an unusual situation because they are calling for and protesting in a very tenacious and, as I say, courageous way, Sacramento's camping ordinance, which bars people from living outside, even on private property, for more than one night.
How interesting. I guess the one-night provision came after Mark Maron began working with homeless folks about a decade ago, or?
No, actually, I believe that this was passed in the late 80s, so it's been standing on the books for a while. With the masses of people who are now homeless in Sacramento and in other cities, as you know, police enforcement has become far more severe, and the consequences of that enforcement are increasingly people have been taken to jail, people have lost their property, and we're hoping that we'll be able to file civil action on behalf of these protesters once the criminal charges are resolved. And they are all up for various infractions and misdemeanors. So there'll be a series of trials coming up pretty soon.
Now, I should first ask, how many folks does this impact? How many folks are out there every night usually?
I would say it ranges from 3 to 10 or 15.
And how many are unhoused and how many are housed?
Well, most of these folks are unhoused, and a few of them have places to stay, but you wouldn't want to call them their own apartments or anything like that. They may have found friends that would take them in. But they're primarily homeless, and one of the leaders, for example, lives in his truck, which is parked nearby.
Mm-hmm. So this law that was... Have there been a lot of prosecutions under it in the last year?
Oh, yeah. There are thousands of citations issued every year.
Are the citations for infraction or a misdemeanor crime?
Those are infractions.
And so that means no jury trial, no public defender. But here in Santa Cruz, we tend to, homeless people tend to, use these as toilet paper and throw them away, although it does go to failure to pay and result in additional fines and problems for credit.
Yeah.
I mean, how do homeless folks in Sacramento, and not just the protesters, deal with these citations? Do they just ignore them? Do they take them to a lawyer?
Well, we actually have what's called a homeless court. And that was set up probably 20 years ago by a wonderful public defender called Tommy Klinkenbeard. So it's called the Tommy Klinkenbeard Clinic. Gets no funding from the courts at all. And it's run on the basis of some grant funding, some support from our major homeless Grand Central meal program, stuff like that. They have housed it and supported it. They're volunteer lawyers. So if you get a ticket in Sacramento, you take it down to the Tommy Klinkenbeard Clinic, and you're set up to do community service. So that's one positive thing that the community has come together to ensure, that people have representation, they are able to work the tickets off, doing all kinds of gardening and other kinds of services around loaves and fishes primarily, I think. And therefore, they avoid the piling up of warrants that is so destructive.
Now, is there, in Santa Cruz, since 2006 or thereabouts, the local courts have stopped issuing warrants on infraction crimes, but simply, as I was saying before, directed them to a collection agency for which, you know, an additional $300 is added on.
Right.
But I take it in Sacramento there are still warrants being issued for infraction citations?
I believe so. I haven't heard that has been lifted. And one of the things we're seeing is that we sued them in 2007 and went to trial in 2011 for taking people's property. So that continues to go on, and that's one of the main disruptive results of the police harassment and displacement of homeless people.
Was your lawsuit successful? Yeah. I mean, did you get property back?
It was successful. We got settlements for each and every person, but without a lot of work to bring people together again to make the complaint, we haven't been able to file another action. I mean, it's a question of getting those specific people and the specific times that they've lost property all back together to show that this is a continuing practice. And that's very difficult because people have moved on or they've gone into the woods, and in various ways it's difficult to contact them.
In Santa Cruz, activists like Steve Plaich and Huff, well, there have been various efforts to try to, gather plaintiffs to sue the city for property seizure, gather plaintiffs to sue in small claims court for sleep deprivation, which is itself a tort, under, you know, even though it's supposedly legal to go after these folks who are homeless for sleep. We haven't, you know, and these efforts have actually, they haven't gone anywhere in terms of any final results or even, they're not even in the courts right now. Though at one time, 20 years ago, we did attempt to essentially crowd the courts by, you know, bringing lots of people in and doing that, which, you know, had some positive impacts. It persuaded nervous politicians to create nothing in terms of fundamental legal change, but essentially tolerated zones. It was called the Back 40 for homeless folks for a while. But the homeless court situation, I know in San Francisco, the Coalition on Homelessness opposes homeless courts. At least that was my understanding some time back, because they feel it's a way of evading the issue of criminalization of the homeless by saying, oh, yeah, admit your crime, and then you get to, you know, do some slave labor to make up for your crime of sleeping at night. What's your thought about that?
I think that our homeless court is playing a positive role. I don't think that a lot of the homeless folks could even get to the courthouse where these things are handled, and I think that the failures to appear and the warrants would pile up and make life more difficult. So for our community, partly because of loaves and fishes, it's been a powerful measure to keep people from suffering too much from these tickets.
And we should say Loaves and Fishes, of course, is an organization that provides meals and services for homeless folks.
Yeah, that's our Grand Central. That's our only place that opens its arms to anyone and everyone on the basis of need. But I wanted to point out that these occupations of City Hall are very important, and I wrote an article for one of the newspapers that I write for, the People's Tribune, which is a national newspaper, and it can be found online, as well as Homeward, which is our street newspaper. But there have been occupations of City Hall across the country, and specifically in this area, in Sacramento, and of course Santa Cruz and Berkeley. So the perception that we have is that resistance is rising, and the pressure on homeless people that is being multiplied by skyrocketing rents is now there for everyone to see. And the visibility of homelessness and the massive nature of it and the suffering that it causes are out there. They can no longer say that the people who are living on the street are just a bunch of losers. The issues of unemployment, of displacement, deindustrialization, and the whole thrust of government policy, which is if you don't need them, don't feed them. This is a population that is looked upon as unnecessary.
You know, let me interrupt you for a minute here, Kathleen, because you're talking to the converted, not just me,
but most
of the folks who are doing this. In fact, in Santa Cruz and in some other cities, what has actually happened is the opposite. That is to say, instead of talking about homeless people as, bums, they're being now regarded as criminals, needle-using, poo-poo-leaving, oblivious. You look at the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle, which is not a good place to get any good information, usually. And you'll see this, all the homeless problem, which they mean these damn homeless are all around and I don't want to have to be around them because they're menacing our children, all this crap. That seems to be increasing in different places. For example, we recently tried to pass an amendment to end our sleeping ban law. It wouldn't end it entirely, but it would eliminate the word sleeping. Camping would still be in it, so there was some dispute as to how significant this would be. But it was voted down 5-2 by the city council. The upside was it's the first time it's been on the council agenda in a meaningful way.
We have to keep fighting because we're really fighting for the value of human life. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing, even though we're fortunate enough to have a community radio station like this, one point we have to make is that as far as we can see, there is no political will, there is nothing on the drawing board that speaks to the need for housing. It seems to us that the powers that be have no intention of housing this growing population.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're talking...
That's why...
we agree.
So that's why it's so important to keep fighting and to recognize that just because from time to time a housing project is prepared for homeless people or 50 rooms are open or even 500 rooms are open, the pressure on this population in L.A., and you probably know the statistics, is 13,000 a month of people.
I want to get back to
30,000 a month are going homeless.
Kathleen, I want to get back to Sacramento. I mean, the kind of comments you're making, you know, are to us background because we know this.
Yes, yes.
What we don't know, for example, and what I'd like to learn is what's the story? Are folks who are currently camping out folks who have been arrested and then returned to camp? Are they new people? Does a multiple arrest mean they hold you in jail? Have the authorities backed off because of the publicity? I mean, I've heard that the Sacramento is considering looking for places for homeless encampments that are legal spots.
Yes, yes. A group of city councilmen went up to Seattle with Shock and other groups and the director of Loaves and Fishes, Sister Libby. So the protest has spurred that kind of motion. There's tremendous opposition to setting aside a sanctioned campground.
Where is that in the legislative process? I mean, is it just, you know, more babble from the politicians, or are there any concrete proposals on the boards?
Well, we've made concrete proposals. The other group that has been active is Safe Ground in Sacramento Safe Ground, and that group specifically advocates and has identified land. For example, there's a big strip of freeway that goes through Sacramento, close to downtown, and we propose that these open areas be permitted to be.
Right. I mean, you know, I know you. I know you have
another question. There is a core.
Wait. Before you go to my other question, let me get you to answer this question, which is, have any politicians, is it gained any traction or leverage in the local legislature, the local city council?
Say yes and no. Yes, there have been, words have been said, and then that would be the yes part, and then the no part is no concrete measures have been even proposed.
And there has been no cessation, I take it, of police enforcement. But that gets me back to my original question, which is, and this is a question that really is helpful for understanding tactics throughout the country. For example, there is a fight coming up in Salinas that you're probably aware of on the 22nd of March when Attorney Anthony Prince and the Salinas Union of the Homeless have declared they're going to fight the evictions in Chinatown the next day. What should the strategy be? And I guess it really depends on the people and their, you know, their individual needs and so forth. But I guess I'm asking, what has the strategy been in Sacramento? Are people just getting repeatedly arrested? Is it new people coming in? Are they ignoring the people because of one thing or another? What's happening there in terms of the protesters?
Yes, people are being repeatedly arrested. They are being taken to jail. It's fairly clear that they violated the Constitution in focusing on the protesters when there are people sleeping in doorways just steps away from City Hall. So what I see...
Sorry, Kathleen, do they come back?
Yes, yes. They're repeatedly arrested and they come back.
But these are infraction arrests?
Some of them are misdemeanors. Some of our people were charged with resisting arrest or interfering with a police officer. So other charges have been coupled to the basic camping violation, or there's some others, other kinds of things that they've cited. We've won the issue of providing food in public, but because originally they were breaking down and hassling people for putting out meals, and the lines that have formed there at the encampment, sometimes 100 people long. But what I wanted to say about the success and the structure of this occupation and the protest, and I don't know how long we'll be able to sustain it, is that there's a core of people, small core, like 5 to 10 people, that have stabilized the protest. Those are the folks that have made this protest their way of life.
Now, are these people all unhoused folks? And is the leadership in the unhoused community, or is there a significant housed component?
No, it is homeless folks who have been, trained and encouraged and supported by a broader community of people that cook dinner at this site for a year before the protest began. So there's a lot of community support. There are people coming by in cars and replacing sleeping bags that are lost and making sure that people can come home and get a shower or get a meal or take a break for a couple nights.
And this is a nightly protest, right, Kathleen? It doesn't, here in Santa Cruz, we have a weekly Freedom Sleeper protest. We just had number 36. But I'm assuming that this in Sacramento happens every night?
It does, and all day. The other key to the success is that the protest, to some extent, became a kind of a communication and resource center for the homeless population generally. So that's been very positive, and it's helped sustain it, so that for long periods of time, there would, during the day, 20 or more people would gather. They would be having lunch on the lawn. They would be talking to each other, playing music. We've done some study groups down there and some education about our newspapers. So that's been positive. On the other hand, the people that are difficult, they don't play well with groups or have difficulty adjusting and adapting to any kind of leadership structure, that has always threatened the protest and will continue to threaten it, because many people are vulnerable, they're volatile, they don't really get it, they don't understand totally that this is a protest, so it's a question of how do you make that your focus as opposed to whatever else you're doing with your days.
Well, of course, we had a similar problem in Santa Cruz. We tried, Sorry, say that again.
I say it's always a threat, and it's the reason why the community support is so important.
Yeah, I mean, what I just wanted to kind of compare it to Santa Cruz, because we are talking mainly, unfortunately, to a Santa Cruz audience here, but although we do go out to different cities, we found, and there always is this thing with protests, there people gather together because it feels like it's safer, there's more companionship, there's more company in an area, and folks who are doing that, of course, some of them are drinkers, some of them are drug users, self-medicators, some of them would be regarded as oop-de-doo, a little bit hypertense or liable to go off, and that just happens. There are some who have said here, oh, we have to lay down rules for people and control them in that way. What's been the strategy used by protesters? Is there sort of a tight set of no drugs, no alcohol, no bad behavior? Are you looking to, you know, kind of coax the middle class into believing that, you know, everything is a wonderful, rosy middle class protest? Or what do you do? What's your situation there?
Well, I think that we support and encourage the self-organization and self-governance. So just this week, there was a gathering of some of the most dedicated people, some of the leaders, to discuss what kinds of rules, what kinds of, you know, procedures should be followed. The fact is, you're in a public place, so you're not going to be able to totally insulate or protect yourself from some of the disruption that is swirling around you. But meeting, support, education, coordination, people who are on the ground deciding what's the best thing to do, that is the path to success. But the other thing I would say is supporting the leadership and stressing the importance of a united leadership.
Let me ask you also, are you yourself, have you been a part of this? You've been sleeping out there overnight yourself.
You know, I haven't been sleeping out there, but I live just a couple blocks away. So I'm supporting the protest. For example, we're the place where one of the leaders parks his truck so he can sleep nearby.
So you're a house person. You're a house person supporting
them. I'm a house person, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm just right down the street, though. So
yeah, so am I.
And,
so,
yeah. You know, we've done as much as we can. And I'm there, you know, or someone from Shock is there as often as they can be. Plus, you know, we meet every week. I mean, this is part of the support that has made it possible for some of the protesters to continue. We meet every week, not very far, within a mile, and we discuss the protest and what's needed. We're coordinating it with the Right to Rest bill that is the statewide legislation that will be heard March 29th. You probably know that.
Actually, I want to get an update on that, too. But before I do, how did the protest begin? Who initiated it? And what was the catalyst that initially had people out there? You mentioned there was kind of a gradual people having, you know, having meals there. And then there's been, of course, a whole history with Shock and others, you know, fighting this. But how did December this began? What sparked it off? Was it well planned or did it just happen spontaneously? What went down?
It was well planned, and it was the Community Dinner Project, just to clarify, that launched this protest, and the leadership included Faygo, who is, you know, with the Community Dinner Project, who started the Community Dinner Project, inspired people. So that project served dinner before the council meeting every week, as I mentioned, for a year, virtually every week. So they brought around them community supporters, people that were providing food and all the other things that they needed, you know, long tables to serve people, and encouraging folks to attend the city council meetings and make this call, this demand, to repeal the camping ordinance.
So in fact, people have been coming to city council, I don't know, on occasion in some numbers, I was reading how at one point you actually shut down the city council.
Oh, yeah, that did happen one night. So, you know, I would say, though, you know, for your Santa Cruz folks, the community support, the development of leadership from within the homeless community, the ability of those leaders to keep on course, to continue to meet and educate, all these things are key. Because one of the forces is that the pressures on this protest are such that it could disintegrate. That's just the reality. So we are very encouraged and inspired by the fact that they have been protesting for 3 months, over 3 months, 3.5 months. So that's very significant.
Now, Kathleen, you've been doing this since 2000. So you came to Shock in 2000.
That's right.
By the way, for all you listeners, we're talking with Kathleen Williams of Sacramento, the Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee, and she's not in Sacramento at the moment, if I understand it right, but she's been there a lot, and we're talking about the protests right outside City Hall and the struggle to restore basic rights to homeless folks in Sacramento and hopefully elsewhere. Have there been prior protests like this that you've been aware of that had a certain arc, had a certain, they failed to produce, if they existed, the ultimate consequence of, decriminalizing homelessness. But I've always found that the protests usually have some positive consequences anyway. At least that's my hope in Santa Cruz. What's been your experience in Sacramento?
In 2009, we had a series of organized campgrounds on private property that ended in arrest and just so much pressure on the 30 or so folks that brought themselves together under the umbrella of Safe Ground to camp in an organized way.
That was on Mark Maron's property, right?
Yeah, that's right.
He was the attorney. And is he still active?
Oh, yeah. In fact, we are meeting next week with 30 or 40 people who have come together around this issue of pressuring the city council, supporting the protesters. There's actually two different tracks now. There is the call to repeal the camping ordinance. In other words, to recognize that homeless folks that are sleeping outside are outside because there are no alternatives and there's no housing. So there's that track. Then the other track is to create a number of sanctioned campgrounds. I mean, we have 1,000 people living outside in Sacramento, and that is a small number as compared to, for example, Los Angeles or other cities. San Jose, for example, had 400 people, I think, in the jungle. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So these are big numbers, and that's why it's so important that people realize we've got to keep fighting, because they're not going to give it to us. They're not going to give it to us without a determined, massive, continual struggle. So there's no point in getting discouraged. We know from the outset that this is going to take a mass movement, and, the importance of connecting up with the people that are looking at the water quality, that are looking at access to nutritious food, health. I mean, all these survival movements are coming together and funneling into, a massive demand on our...
Now, in the activists, let me interrupt you for a moment here. In the activist community here, there's some concern that what housed activists are doing is they're sort of throwing homeless to the wolves out there with these protests, so that this has been one of the criticisms of trying to start protests again down here, that you're simply feeding sort of the court munching machine that munches on the homeless, and it doesn't really help in the sense that it's not people who are, you're saying that in Sacramento it was homeless folks that brought this together. But there's obviously a significant percentage of folks involved who are not homeless. Are you getting a lot of criticism for, throwing the poor and those outside to the wolves?
No, I don't think that that's, been a source of opposition. With friends like that, you don't really need enemies. I mean, I just ask you, what alternative is there?
You know, that's often the question I ask. I think if you're not willing to risk arrest, then you're essentially doomed to continue walking in the same traces that have been laid down for you. But,
yeah.
You know, but there are those who say going to jail does no good. You have to work in sort of in a guerrilla fashion, work on the edge of the law, embarrass the tourists and the businesses into behaving, you know, and better putting pressure on them. You know, use the media. I mean, the same kinds of things that you're doing anyway, but that don't involve mass occupations and arrests, because you're dealing with, you know, your power is not in any way equal to the might and power and financial, you know, resources of the government
right.
that's repressing you. And also, you know, homeless people, as you know, although as you've seen, you folks have done a great job of it, are not easily organizable. They're very individualistic. They have a variety of different needs. Their concern often is to get out of their situation individually rather than fight as a group, and like, you know, unions of other kinds of workers or other kinds of oppressed people. Anyway.
Well, the main thing is when you're on the edge of survival, it's difficult to bring that level of sacrifice to your political work.
Right. It can be difficult, or alternatively, it can be something that you really are more motivated ultimately to do
right.
because you feel you have less to lose because you're up against it anyway.
Yeah.
Kathleen, talk a little bit about the right to rest. I've been rather cynical about it. To me, it seemed like a nice organizing tool for RAP and other organizations, but also, and you know, certainly a well-intended action, but one that seems to have little leverage, little traction with the state government.
Well, I think that it's an important project, and it has brought together homeless groups across the state. As you know, it's brought together folks from LA Can, for example, with groups in the north and even in Oregon, so, and in Colorado. So it's definitely, as you say, had that good effect. We have a devoted senator, Senator Liu, who is behind the bill. I don't know what the outcome will be in March. Actually, it's Tuesday, March 29th at 1:30. That's when the hearing is. We will be having a rally earlier that day, and very important to put that on your calendar because we will have a chance to testify. But all these things are steps along the road. There are different ways to attack this, but the important thing is to keep working at it because it's not going away.
No, I hear that call, and I'm sure that's true, although I think, you know, I've found over the last couple of decades when I've been rather continuously involved in certain aspects of this struggle down here.
I know
here.
You have.
You know, I find, you know, you're going to have people who will work on it for brief periods of time, some for longer periods of time, some who get into housing and, you know, they're sympathetic, but they have other lives to live. They've been, you know, doing stuff on the streets. Now they want to do something else, and I can't blame them for that. You know, what I'd like to do is off-air maybe get from you some contact information if you can find it and get the permission of the people involved, for people who are actually at the protest, so we can hear what their sort of on-the-ground experiences is, though I don't know how exciting, you know, or how different it would be from that of any other protest. But
well, I think that's an excellent idea. Why don't I why don't you do what you have to do, and I will give you the number of Fago, who's been the mainstay of this, although it's my understanding that he stepped back a little right now. So,
okay, let's wind this up, although I should probably ask a few questions. Is this mostly a white male group? Do women have a significant role in terms of minorities? Is there a significant role? I know that that's politically correct kind of question, but it's also a significant one.
Yes, I think that all women are part of this, are in the leadership, and it is a diverse group. Some of the solid people are European American, and some of the solid people are African American. We have had some participation from Latinos as well, and we feel that it's pretty diverse, well-grounded protest.
Fair enough. Well, Kathleen, we've been talking with Kathleen Williams of SHOC, Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee. Is there more you think we should cover specifically about this protest? Any particular events coming up in terms of, oh, I don't know, benefits for the protest? I guess I was also going to ask you before I go, have there been any trials of protesters so far?
No, not that I know of. There have not. And they are all getting public defenders, and it's my understanding that they are pressing for trials or dismissals.
How many cases are we talking about?
I would say we've got 15 going at this point.
Does that mean there have only been 15 arrests?
Well, there've been more arrests, but some of them have been infractions. Some people haven't been charged. And you know that the first night that they came after the protesters in a massive way was January 1st at 2 a.m. when 50 cops in a tactical squad gathered around the protesters to sweep them away and brought paddy wagons and so forth. So a lot of time and energy has been spent by law enforcement, and one of our points is let's not use our law enforcement dollars this way.
Mm-hmm. How has your group avoided the fencing off of the area, as was done, for example, in the jungle, and probably as is planned at Chinatown on March 23rd, and as is being done in San Francisco for the Division Street encampments? Why didn't the police after January 1st just put up fences and stop homeless folks from returning? And what would be your response, do you think, if they did?
Well, this was a narrow median outside between the sidewalk and the street. If it were fenced off, people would just move down the street. Plus, you probably know that in Boise, the federal court held that the homeless protest there, people had a right to occupy the spot. They had a right to sleep there. And there are serious First Amendment concerns with a protest at a city hall. And that's something that people in Santa Cruz should keep in mind. This is not an encampment in that sense. This is a protest. And the First Amendment is a very important shield for the survival activity of sleeping in the political center of the city.
You know, we have in two things. In Santa Cruz, they've made it illegal to be at the center of government in the courtyard area, which is an open area that's, it's not like it's enclosed at all.
Yes, I've seen the pictures. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was part of their attempt to successfully, well, somewhat, to crush the what's called Peace Camp 2010, a massive...
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I was certainly just a reporter around that rather than initially I was a participant, but not for more than a week. But the issue, you know, Bell versus Boise, the statement of interest that the federal government gave saying, you know, oh, no, we don't want you to criminalize the homeless. If there's no shelter, you can't do that, you know, cruel and unusual punishment. It wasn't just directed at First Amendment activity, as you were saying. It's also directed more broadly at the homeless population that has no shelter. So has this served as a protection for homeless people generally across the city, most of whom are not involved in this protest that's being done?
No, I don't think homeless people across the city have been protected at all. But I wasn't speaking of the statement of interest. I was speaking of the court's order. I don't know what form it took, whether it was an injunction or what, but their order protecting the protesters from being driven from the city hall area where they were protesting and they were occupying the ground.
I see. What about... coalitions with groups like tenants and students and unions.
I think that's very important. Isn't
Have they jumped on board, or are they elsewhere?
You know, we have gotten support, for example, from medical students at the nearby UC Davis Medical School, but a lot more needs to be done. One way we reach out to that community is through our newspaper, Homeward, and we have articles that we work with students, you know, to prepare, or we cover things that they're doing. And so we use the paper as a unifying force, but in terms of fully reaching out to all the organizations and groups in Sacramento that could be allies, we haven't done that, partly because we're small.
Yeah, I'm not criticizing you. I often bring this up at the small meetings that we have here in Santa Cruz, and I talk about it, but I've evolved no strategy of, dealing with tenants who are under severe pressures here, perhaps even more so than in Sacramento, although I don't know. Santa Cruz is this beach gentrified town, which is now as a really hostile minority of very active and very effective right-wing, I would call it a hate group, Take Back Santa Cruz, around homeless folks.
Oh, my God.
And pretty serious stuff. I could go on, but I've got a deadline to get to. Let me don't hang up, but I will sort of sign off. I'll let you have the last word, and then you can pass on this contact information, and we can, proceed.
Well, I would just, call out to your listeners. Don't be discouraged. These protests are going to continue. They're going to get larger. We're not going to be, driven out of this country. We're not going to allow immigrants to be driven out. We're going to hold this ground, and the situation of homeless people is one that is perilously close for many working people and struggling people in this country.
Yeah, right. Of course, I agree. And Kathleen, are there places people can go to read more about this online? Homeward's online?
Yes. The Sacramento Homeward newspaper, if you put in SHOC, which is SHOC, Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee, Homeward, you will be able to access our archives, where we have detailed articles on the protest and photographs. And that's one source. The Community Dinner Project is on Facebook. That's another source. So it's easy to get in contact and get more information.
Sounds good to me. Kathleen, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, Robert.
All right.
Over relief efforts. It's exactly a similar situation.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway, saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling. Voice was chanting as the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land, from California California to the New York Island.